Welcome to another exciting episode of Let's Chat With. Joining me is Kayla Drescher, an award-winning magician and the host of the podcast, She's Amp. How are you doing?
I am alive, and that's my baseline currently, so doing great.
How's your magic been holding up over the last year?
Well, obviously magic kind of took a strange turn during the virtual age of the pandemic, and I'm a person that really benefits from breaks. And so I did not throw myself fully into the virtual space. I did not create a virtual show. I just used material that I've been doing forever and it worked virtually. So I didn't really promote, I didn't really promote the virtual show just because I didn't enjoy it at all. So for me, I took a really nice break and I was able to dive into like some new hobbies and TV shows, and I got into a lot of new things, which then by the time magic started going into being in person again, I had all this new material and all this new, like, these new elements of myself to bring into new routines. And I ended up getting about 3 new routines just in the course of a couple of weeks, just because I was able to leave magic, take a little bit of a break, and go into all these new interests and things. I like to bring in my personality and interests into magic, and so because I had all these new things I wanted to talk about, I was able to create new routines. So I think it was great.
What were some of the hobbies that you did during this pandemic?
So I am now a massive Trekkie. I love Star Trek so much. And so got really into Star Trek. Got really into the game Warhammer, which, if for those that don't know what Warhammer is, it's this game that takes place in the year 40,000, and there's nothing but war. And so it's a tabletop game where you choose an army and you collect different elements of that army. You build and paint your models. So it's a lot of tinkering, a lot of very creative work. And then you play this incredibly complicated game. And there are stores. So there's one about 20 minutes away from where I live where we go and we play people we've never met. We just play this awesome game. And all of a sudden you have a whole new group of friends. And it's just really fun. So that's a really cool hobby to be a part of now. So those were my main two things.
So how did you get started in magic?
Yeah, so I've been doing magic since I was 7 years old. I'm originally from Connecticut. My dad and I wandered into this magic shop in about an hour away from where we lived. And this guy behind the counter, he did a cut and restored rope routine. So he cut a rope in half and threw it back together. And I couldn't believe it. But at that age, I was already really into performing. I loved dancing. I loved acting. I just loved being on stage, making people laugh and clap. And I just loved that. But also I was a really logical person. So I really love science and math. And I loved figuring out how the whole world worked. And I always asked a lot of questions and dug in the dirt and stuff. So magic was this perfect combination between the theatrical side of me, the need of performing, and the need of also understanding the behind the scenes of how things function. And it was this perfect, it just clicked automatically. So I performed in my second grade school talent show. I performed that cut and restored rope routine. And I've been doing it ever since.
Was that with your dad as the assistant?
Yeah, did you watch that video?
Yes, I did. What was it like performing with your dad?
Well, my dad's hilarious, but not in the terms that you would want to give him a microphone. So performing with him and writing, you know, quote, comedy as a 7-year-old with my dad was weird. But looking back on it, we actually did a pretty good job. Like, we were not terrible for a new, brand new comedy duo. But my dad is just a natural comedian socially. And so he's really fun performing with him. Nowadays, he's almost 80 years old. And nowadays he still will go, oh, do you have a show tonight? Yes, Dad, I do. And then he'll say, do you want me to come do my rope routine? So he still is like trying really hard to get on stage. I do not allow it. I do not allow him in the show.
You went to college to study environmental science with a focus in green energy, but you decided to stick with magic. Why stick with magic?
Well, I don't do well with daily structure. I find it very confining, and I got a job that was a 9-to-5 structured job Monday through Friday, and it was behind a desk, and it was everything that I didn't like. It didn't satisfy the need to perform. It didn't satisfy the need to explore the world, those two parts of my brain that are still very prevalent all these years later. And I just couldn't, I couldn't see myself having a normal job. I was very miserable. And pretty much the first day of getting this job, I remember getting in my car and I was just in tears. And I called my dad and said, I can't do this. I have to be a magician. I have to perform. And he had a lot of concerns, obviously, in terms of like, how am I going to pay for healthcare? And where do I make money? And so I spent about a year bartending and trying to do magic behind the bar and cut my teeth and get better and better. And that's when I realized, oh yeah, this is absolutely what I need to do. Is just having the ability to perform was absolutely the thing that I needed. If I didn't have it, I think I would not have been a very happy person. So having that desk job is what showed me, oh, I need to perform.
What was it like performing in bars and stuff like that for people?
Oh, it's really hard. I don't recommend doing bar magic if you are not already a thick-skinned person. However, if you have a thick skin and you're able to handle people who are drinking and people who are partying and, you know, demanding folks, and it's a lot. People are very special when they come to a bar, often privileged, often a bit drunk. It is, you know, a difficult audience to perform for. But if you naturally are good at handling that, it's a great place to get good because you are going to be experiencing everything bad. Like you're going to experience getting things thrown at you. You're going to experience hecklers. You're going to experience everything because it's a bar. So it's a great place to learn how to handle everything. So now, no matter where I'm performing, I have clients that call me and they say, we have to rehire you because there's no one else that can handle our crowd like you can. And that's all because of my experience behind a bar. So as difficult as it is, you learn to handle everything. So then shows are just easy peasy, no matter the heckler, no matter the audience participant, you can handle everything after a couple of years behind the bar.
So speaking of shows, you have your own show called Magic in Heels. What is magic in heels? And besides the obvious that you wear heels, how did you come up with magic in heels?
So I was looking for something. I'm bad at business. I'm bad at marketing. I'm a better performer than I am at running a business. And I know that. But also as a magician, you have to be able to do both. You have to be the product and sell the product. And so I was trying to figure out what's a good website, because Kayla Drescher Magic, you can't find it. How do you spell any of my name? So done. I had to come up with a better website. And I came up with Magic in Heels just one day. It just clicked. And I bought the domain and I loved it. It was ideal. And then I realized I'd have to perform in heels, which is very unfortunate because I hate them. I hate wearing heels. I want to wear sneakers. Oh, I wish I chose magic in pajamas, honestly. And so Magic in Heels has been a great captivating headline for folks when they do a Google search for magicians. It's a really good, people go, oh, let's click on this. And because you're not quite sure what it means, but you're pretty sure it's different. And when you click on it and you scroll through my website, you realize the tone of what this means. And Magic in Heels is literally just a woman performing magic in heels. And every part after that is like, oh, wow, look at her accolades. Look at what she's done. I want to hire her now. But compared to on a Google search, you see like white's magic, green's magic, black's magic. Like it's all very standard. You click around and every magician kind of looks alike. And then you see magic in heels and, oh, okay, this is very interesting. So I've gotten a lot of work just based off of that title. Magic in Heels to me just means it's a different kind of show, but that's the very surface level. That's very much you're looking at the promo photo, you're looking at just what I'm wearing, and you see, oh yes, magic and heels. But when you start to watch the show, you realize, wow, this is a really different magic show than anything I've experienced. It's a lot of stories, it's a lot of audience participation, it's a lot of improv, because I don't know what the audience is gonna do. And so it's a lot of, like, you could see the show every day for a week and it would be different, a little bit different every single time, because the audience is so different. So what I love about that, the show title and the business name, is it just brings you in and you realize, wow, how incredibly different this show is from all other magic shows.
So other than your show Magic and Heels, you've performed in the Champions of Magic. What was it like performing in a traveling show? And what was, and do you have any interesting road stories you can share?
Many, many, many interesting road stories. I performed in Champions of Magic for 3 years, actually performing, and then a year, you know, doing some behind the scenes during the pandemic. So I was a part of the brand for 4 years, and I learned so, so much. It was an amazing experience. And we got to perform in these stunning 5,000 seat theaters where almost sold out, like, what? Oh my gosh, arenas. We did arena tours. We lived on tour buses. We were in Canada, Mexico, England, Scotland. Like, we've just been everywhere. So it honestly was the time of my life. I'm sad to say that I did decide to leave the show to pursue more of my own stuff and be home more, of course, because on the road it's quite exhausting, and you miss your family very much. And so I did step down, but it was just such an amazing experience. It's such a fun show because the cast doesn't change. You know, the fact that I left is like, that's the first change in 4 years that's happened. So it's the same cast. It's not a rotating thing like some of the other, like Masters of Illusion or The Illusionists. We do a lot of stuff. We would do ensemble pieces, and that really requires you to be the same cast every show, because we would work together to create these different pieces. And so we would add new things in where all five of us are on stage doing magic with the same thing. So we would each do something with a borrowed $20 bill, or talk about the first magic trick we ever learned. And so it was this really amazing camaraderie. It was very much like a family, and it was a blast. My favorite story, well, I think there are two. One's quick. One is that I learned that on a tour bus, you have to make sure you sleep with your head facing the back of the bus. Because if you are doing it the opposite way and the bus slams on the brake and your head will go into the wall, oh, you'll just die. Like, that's the end of you, right? So it was terrifying. Thank goodness someone told me that, like, day one, because I would not have really understood. So the tour bus life is fascinating. It gets a little smelly pretty quickly, the amount of shoes in a tight space. The tour bus bathroom is very particular, so you can't actually put anything solid in the toilet. So just, you know, I'll use your imagination to figure out how that one works, and whatever you're imagining is correct. And then my favorite story, though, is we had the ability to perform at San Quentin Prison, which was awesome. And so I do a routine about my parents, because they are fascinating people. My mother was, and this is all true, my mother was a 5-time national judo champion, and my dad was a state, right? And my dad was a state police officer. He worked in narcotics and gambling. And so I do a routine about how scary my parents were. And in high school, I didn't date much. And so I decided to do this routine in a prison, in a maximum security prison, and talk about how my dad was a police officer. So I was a little nervous, and I actually checked in with a couple of the guys at the start, like, hey, if I'm going to do this, is there going to be a riot? And they were like, no, you're fine. So I made a lot of jokes about it. I even said, my dad is a cop, I'm very sorry. And like, made lots of comments about it. And at the end of the show, there a group of gentlemen were asked us if we wanted to know what they did to land in prison. So of course we were curious, and they kind of went around the group, and some sold drugs and too many times got caught. There were a lot of people who committed murder. And this one particular man said, when I was 18, I killed a cop, and then looked at me and said, just like your dad. which to someone with an emotional range, that would have been very hard hitting. And I instead went, oh, tell me everything. And so me and this gentleman became, actually, I would say we're friends, because we like emailed once, which was kind of cool. But we just spent the day together just talking about the justice system in the US and how he was forced as a black man to be in a gang, you know, that he didn't see any other option. He didn't know anything else. He didn't know math. He didn't know how to he didn't know what to do in the world. So he joined a gang. And of course, it got violent. And now he's a 65-year-old man that's been in prison since he was 18 years old. And now he's working to better the world and help the youth of the U.S. Find their passion and grow and not have to join a gang and see that there are other options for their life. So it's really amazing. And that to me was just this really brilliant experience where I forgot how cool magic can be and how connective magic can create such a unique connection between very unlikely people, because magic really just boils you down to your most simplistic reaction, you know, wonderment, joy, you're fascinated by things. And because of that, I was able to, and because I was willing to share something on stage, he was willing to share something with me, and we connected, and that was really cool. So that honestly is my favorite experience, being in the show. I know it's not like a part of a show or anything, but honestly, that's hands down the best experience. One of the best experiences of my life.
Would you ever go back to there and perform again?
Yeah, desperately. Desperately want to go back. It was awesome. It was the best audience I've ever performed for. It was 250 guys in a room, and you're like, this could be dangerous if they wanted it to be. And it wasn't. It was like, wow, these men are amazing, and I want to hang out here. Like, let's have lunch and hang out, and this is awesome. And it was great. Big standing ovation. It was the best audience I've ever performed for. So yeah, I would go back in a heartbeat.
You have won many awards throughout your career, including the David Copperfield Search for the Next Great Magician. What was that like, winning that award?
It was exactly the moment I needed at that point in my career. Obviously, it's a great honor for David Copperfield to choose me out of everyone that submitted. Great magicians submitted to this contest. And then three of us were finalists. We performed on the Today Show live. And for David Copperfield to say, like, oh, Kayla is good enough to be flown out to Vegas and get a tour of the museum and all of that, was like, wow, this is pretty great. And at that time in my life, I was at that kind of year point of after I quit my desk job and was bartending, and I didn't have any self-esteem as a magician. I honestly just was like, I don't know if I can do this. That came about, and I was like, okay, I think I can do this. I think I'm creative enough, and I've got some chops. I just need to keep pushing, and I think I can do this. And so it was a really amazing experience, and meeting Copperfield is obviously awesome. He's a really kind person, and I'm very lucky and honored to have had the experiences I had. In full disclosure, I really wish that award came like 5 years later, because I did not deserve it. I did not have the chops to back up that award. It's kind of one of those things. This happens a lot in like comedy and magic. It happens a lot in just for the performer space, where you get an opportunity well before you're ready. And although I still use that, the title and some quotes on my website from that experience, really, I was just too young to have won that award, and I wish it came a little bit later so that I could have like really backed it up and gone, all right, I'm the next great magician, let's do this. And really, that just came a little bit too early, but I'm still happy. I'm so honored that it happened. It was an amazing experience. I performed on national television. Like, how cool is that? At 23 years old. Amazing.
And you said that you went to his museum. What was that like?
Yeah, so the prize for that contest was to be flown out to Vegas, see Copperfield's show, and then get a tour of the museum. And everyone is constantly trying to get a tour of his museum for obvious reasons. It's massive, and it's the largest magic history collection, I think, that exists in the world. And he's just – just collected these amazing artifacts and posters and stories and letters and illusions. And so we got this amazing tour. And there was one at one point where we got into this vault. And there were a couple other people on the tour. We went into the vault and he handed me this very old, clunky metal contraption. And he said, "Do you know what that is?" And when I looked at it, it was pretty obvious. I just knew it was the method behind an illusion called the broom suspension, where someone, you know, puts a broom under their armpit and then they are able to levitate horizontally in the air, just balanced on this broom. And so I looked at it and said, "I think it's a broom suspension harness." And he said, "Yes, but do you know whose broom suspension harness?" It took me a second, and then my eyes welled up. I could not believe it. I was in shock. And he was like, "Yeah, that's the original Robert Houdin broom suspension harness for his 11-year-old son." Wow. And I could not handle that. It was amazing. So I was just holding this like very old piece of iconic magic history. And that's kind of the whole museum. The whole place is like that. Is you could go anywhere and just be like, "Wow, wow, that, wow, 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 wow." So it was a really cool like 4 hours of my life just going through this museum. And they've created this show, really, where from start to finish, there's multiple callbacks to things and things jump out at you on occasion. And it's just it's a really brilliant experience. And if you ever have the chance to go. Obviously, you know, don't call him constantly for a tour, but if you ever have the opportunity to go, like drop everything else you're doing and go do it, because it's amazing.
Did he ever, like during the tour, just say, "Hey, can you do something for me? Like perform just a quick trick for me or something?"
No, I think because it's such a structured show where he actually has staff that come and run certain things and make things move and do illusions throughout it. There's no real time for like an additional jam or hangout or anything. But I did get to chat with him a little bit just afterwards, and we talked about food and hung out and. He's just a really cool person. I got to go back a couple years later we filmed something for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And so I got to just like actually properly hang out and talk about more food. And we talk a lot about food. And he's just a really, really kind person. It was awesome.
So besides you, two other of my guests have performed on Penn & Teller, Carissa Hendricks and Miranda Allen, who performed on Penn & Teller. What was it like performing with Teller right there beside you, involved in the...
Yeah, the experience of doing a silent routine that is a story with a little emotional twist, to be able to do that with like the king of that is pretty nerve-wracking. I didn't realize how nervous I was, and I practiced this routine probably 50 to 100 times a day while sitting in my hotel room at the Rio. And like I forgot to eat and I forgot to sleep, and I was just practicing this routine. And so to be able to do it with Teller and for him to like it, and like I think he genuinely liked it. I'm gonna hope he genuinely liked it, because even after the cameras weren't rolling, he said very kind things and said that he enjoyed it, as did Penn. But for me to get Teller to say, "Yes, this was a routine I really enjoyed," and for him to be a part of it was awesome. He during the routine, because I do this routine all the time, there's always a point where the person I call up, it clicks in their head what's going on. And they all of a sudden go, "Oh, okay, I see. And now I'm going to play along." Sometimes it's much later in the routine than I would prefer, but it does eventually click right there, right? And for Teller, I saw the moment on his face, which is very early on in the routine, obviously much earlier than most other people because he knows what he's doing, where he just got it. And then I was like, "Ah, now we can just play." And so there were moments that, you know, don't exist in other times I do this. And there were just, it was a lovely experience because he knew exactly what to do. Even though he didn't necessarily know the outcome, he knew what to do in every moment. So it will never be better than that, you know, and there will never be a better volunteer for that routine. And I was so thrilled and relieved when it was done. I like ran up to my hotel room and I remember calling my dad and another friend saying, hey, did it. It went great. Very, very happy. And then I immediately threw up because I did not know how absolutely nervous I was this whole time. And it was awesome. Yeah, it was great. I cannot complain about the experience at all.
You and fellow magician Carissa Hendricks took on a massive project called Modern Wonder. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, massive, massive project. it was big. So I'm a huge Tommy Wonder fan. When I was deciding to do magic as a profession, I just sat in those books forever and I watched I would watch the two cup routine and videos of him on YouTube. And so I've always just admired it. And I wish I was a good enough performer to do the two cups routine, but it just feels like it should never be touched and he's just perfect. Right. So, when Penguin was talking about doing a teach-in of the Books of Wonder, there were a couple of things in the books that just because of, you know, time, that the things don't really exist for you to be able to go buy at like a Target or a dollar store or something. There are just some things like this, like cigarettes, the card to cigarettes. You're probably not doing cigarette magic anymore these days, right? So there are elements that just could have used a modernized twist. And we did not claim to be, you know, more knowledgeable or better than him at all. We just took some of the routines that just can't really be done today and tried to put a modern spin on them. So instead of cigarettes, we used markers. There were just tons of things. So we just took on this gigantic project of modernizing some of the stuff that really you can't find easily nowadays. And so this is a really big project. I'm so glad it's over. It was exhausting and stressful, but it was really fun. And it was my first time doing something with Penguin. And I loved working with them. That was a really great experience. And yeah, it's great.
You're not just a magician. You're also the host of the podcast Shazam. What is Shazam? And can you tell us how it got started?
So basically from the very beginning of my time in magic, so 7 years old, I've just been either told that magic isn't for girls or it's been very much a like, oh, well, in order to be more successful, you need to dress sexier on stage, or you need to be more feminine, whatever it is. The first time I got told I needed to be sexier on stage, I was 13 years old. This is just like a thing that every woman in this industry has some sort of story or stories on this exact level. So I just had it. I had reached my boiling point. This one magic convention that I just said, I am done. And so Carissa Hendricks and I called her up and said, we need to do something. And so I wanted to do a short-lived podcast, like a mini series, just going through what is it like to be a woman in this industry, so that when people ask this question, we don't have to answer it anymore. And we could just say, go listen to the podcast. We're done. And of course, that didn't happen. It has been 4 years now. So although sadly, Carissa is no longer on the project, in season three, we made this massive shift because season one and two was all about, you know, gender diversity within the industry. But in season three, I decided there's a lot more conversation that needs to be had outside of gender diversity and no one else is having it. And I have a microphone and a platform. Why don't I lend this to people who deserve to be heard? And, you know, I can shut up for a little bit. Like, I can talk about my struggles, but I've talked about my struggles for two seasons. So why don't I just step back and let other people talk about their life and their experience in this industry and allied arts industries? And so we've had panel discussions on what's it like to be a magician of Asian descent, what's it like to be a black magician, what's it like to be a woman in the juggling community. It's massive. So I'm really, really proud of the work we've done. It's Also, a massive goal to not shame anyone for not knowing information. You know, I'm not gonna yell at you for not understanding the importance of non-binary pronouns. I'm not gonna yell at you for not understanding what you just said was a microaggression. But we wanna educate people, and more people really need to listen because magic is so much still set in the 50s. You know, magic is very much where comedy was in the 50s and 60s. And the fact that only in the 90s women were allowed in the magic circle in the UK, like that was the 90s. That's in my lifetime that happened. And, you know, still magicians, you know, and our panel of black magicians, hearing people's experiences of what clients have said to them is like, whoa, whoa, it's very racist. So all of that just really needs to be listened to, and there needs to be more people listening and more people willing to make shifts and change. And so that's why the podcast exists, is it's a very kind delivery of information that everyone in this industry needs to know, because as accepting as it feels like magic is, and magic is really supposed to be for people who don't have other places to go socially, like you know, we're all nerds, we're all big geeks and nerds, and it's kind of ridiculous that because we don't have anywhere else to go, we go to magic and we're still not allowed there either. And that's why the Shazam exists, and that's why it will exist for a very long time. And it's important that people listen, not just, you know, I don't make any money off of the podcast. This is purely for the point of boosting up the inclusion in the magic world. And I know things have started shifting and changing, and lots of conversations are happening because of Shazam, but they just need to keep going and they need to keep changing. And I'm exhausted from having all these conversations, but gosh, they really need to keep being had.
What have you taken away from learning from the show and stuff, doing the show?
The biggest thing I've learned from the show is I'm from the Northeast Coast, and how we deal with things living on the Northeast Coast is you know, New York, Boston, it's a lot of swear words, it's a lot of getting in your face, it's a lot of that, and people listen, right? Because they're used to, oh, this is how we deal with things, and then I'm gonna listen to that. Great. Everywhere else in the world does not respond to that level of bluntness, and that is what I have learned. What I have learned is, if I actually want to invoke change here, if I actually want to get people to listen, I need to meet them where they are and then, like, literally hold their hand and bring them across the line. And that's been very difficult for me because I just want to go, how the hell could you say this stuff? I just want to yell at you. Like, I just want to yell at people all the time. But really need to go, okay, let's take a little step back and figure out why you think this. And then I'm going to give you some information and we're going to chat about it. We do this calmly and rationally, and that's really my biggest thing from the podcast, is I've just learned m much better how to communicate with people who have been so stuck in their ways for so long and need to change. And I'm gonna help you with that in a calm and rational manner. So that's been my biggest takeaway.
As an avid listener of the podcast here, I want to know, will there be new episodes coming soon, if any?
Yeah, yes, there will be. So we're shooting for the first week of December. We've got almost half of the season recorded thus far, and so we should be you should see new episodes first week of December.
You posted on Instagram some new photos of you wearing a shirt with a new Shazam logo on it. Does that mean you'll have some new merchandise coming soon?
We do have some new merch. We do have some a new logo, and you know, sometimes you just need a little update. And we got a new logo. We have new merchandise. They're really stunning. Like, our logo designer is just fantastic. And it's a I'm really proud of it. It was great work, and I've got it. I'm looking at a water bottle. I've got the S logo on a water bottle. I've got it on a t-shirt, got it on sweatshirts, bags, there's stickers. Yeah, so we should if you go to shazampod.com and click on the swag button on the top of the page, then you'll get linked immediately to all the new swag stuff.
Finally, where can people find you online? Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, website?
Yeah, so if you're looking for the podcast, like I said, SheZamPod, that's SheZamPod.com. And then if you're looking for me, hi, I'm Kayla. You can go to Magic in Heels, heels like your shoes, not heels like the doctor. I've had to explain that too many times. Heels like your shoes.com, Magic in Heels. And then it's Magic in Heels across the social media platforms, although Twitter is not, because some 13-year-old has Magic in Heels and I cannot get it from that person. So it's just Magic in Heels KD, like my initials. But if you type Magic in Heels into all the social medias, it'll pop right up. And that's where you can find me. Yay.
Well, Kayla, thank you for joining me on this episode of Let's Chat With.
Thanks for having me.